Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. We're just going to roll through a few topics before we get to an interview with Richie Ledesma later in the episode. You good with that, Greg?
Bells, everyone's so excited to hear you speaking to Richie Ledesma. Yes, I'm very good at that. Let's get to that interview right after these bits.
Okay, some bits coming up. First bit is MLS Decision Day. It happened 2 days ago now, and the playoffs are coming up tomorrow and Thursday, the knockout rounds. But I just thought I'd take a moment to say MLS Cup is great and all, but for me, the Supporters Shield is the most impressive accomplishment in the league. That's the trophy for the best regular season record in the league. It takes all the guesswork out of a playoff run and shows who was best over the course of the season. And so a big congratulations from all of us here at Scuffed to New York Red Bulls, who emerged from a wild final day of the season with the trophy and got to pop the champagne as a result.
Congratulations to soon-to-be-announced U.S. men's national team coach Chris Armas.
That's right. Armas, Marsh, Adams, Long, Parker, Sean Davis, Luis Robles, of course, Kaku and Royer and BWP. Just happy for them. They play an appealing brand of soccer, at least one that's fun to watch. And they play the kids too.
Yeah, I almost like watch MLS as like a U.S. men's national team karmic scale. So I was really happy that the Red Bulls had this success. I was happy that Sporting Kansas City had success in the Western Conference. They won the Western Conference on the last day, beating Los Angeles FC, and they have a tremendous academy. So SKC and Red Bulls both sort of adding to our pipeline, I think, in a real way.
Yeah.
It was nice to see. It was almost like nice to see the Galaxy punished in a way by the universe for ignoring all of their outstanding youth prospects.
Right.
So. Yeah, that's my lens on MLS.
Yeah, I totally agree. And then RSL kind of backed their way into the playoffs thanks to that Galaxy collapse. And RSL has, I don't know, half their team is U.S. eligible. So that'll be nice to see if they can, you know, put together a little run after a disappointing end of the season. I will say one other thing on the Red Bulls is defense wins championships. It's true in every sport, and that back four of left to right, Kamar Lawrence, Aaron Long, Tim Parker, and Mario at right back is the best back four in the league, I think, probably by quite a distance, and they're protected by a destroying central defensive midfielder by the name of Tyler Adams. So I think that's kind of a lesson maybe to the rest of the league that invest in your defense and you will reap benefits.
Invest wisely, right? They're actually an incredibly affordable back four plus Tyler Adams plus Robles relative to some of the leakier defenses out there who spend an inordinate subs on their defenders.
That's true. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. I think France sort of lifted the page. I think France had been studying the New York Red Bulls for a while and decided that they'd put all their hopes for the World Cup on N'Golo Kanté. They said, if Tyler Adams can do this, we think N'Golo Kanté can do this. And it worked well for them.
Yeah. Just setting the tone for the rest of the world there in Harrison, New Jersey, aren't they? It was a day full of drama. Plenty of good stuff written by the MLS guys. Check out what Matt Doyle and Bobby Warshaw have written. Charles Bohm wrote something really good, which is on Twitter, and even check out Ives Galarsip's Twitter feed because he's got some good videos on Sunday and Monday of reactions and so forth.
Yeah, then steel yourself for the drama of the one-offs.
Yeah, kind of excited for those. Everything on the line for 90 minutes. Two games tomorrow, two games on Thursday.
Yeah, and from the U.S. men's national team perspective, it's another good one because it seems like there might be some sort of head-to-head matchups that are essentially loser gets to go to Europe and play in the European friendlies.
Right. I'm thinking of Reggie Cannon. It's kind of a win-win for him. Whether he wins or loses, he's going to be, he's probably going to be pretty excited.
And then Columbus, D.C. is a great one because you have these pairs where, I mean, this one's a stretch, but you have Areola versus Zardes, and the loser might end up on the roster. And then you have real ones, I think, would be like Knauss versus Will Trapp, where whoever comes out worse has that consolation prize of a plane ticket to Italy or to England. Yeah. And then Bill Himid and Zach Steffen could be sort of battling for a loss.
That's right. There's three head-to-heads in that game. And interesting. And the loser gets a free trip to Wembley. So don't cry for them. Let's move on. U20s coming up on Thursday, their opener of World Cup qualifying. The U.S. U20s play Puerto Rico. That game is on Univision and CONCACAF Go. You going to watch, Greg?
I'm going to be watching all of these. And the Yay. Opponent is the opponent is almost irrelevant in this first group stage, it seems like. None of the opponents have the infrastructure or resources that the U.S. has. It's going to be a pretty massive disparity. I'm watching for American kids who look like they're playing the game with like a cheat code, or they're playing it on like the easy difficulty setting. That's what I key in on is not just are you pretty good, because everyone in this group is pretty good. That's why you're in the group of the best, 19 to 20 year olds in the country. But are you so good at the amongst other 20-year-olds that everything is perfect? Like, you don't just get the ball to the next player that you're trying to pass to. You put it exactly in stride so that his next step can be efficient. Like, that's what I'm after in this sort of tournament. That's what I watch for.
You're looking for the next Marky Delgado, in other words. I'm just kidding.
I want to see Marky.
Kidding everybody.
That quality on touches, and then also to be able to boss the game in four other ways.
Okay, cool. Yeah. That's a good framework for looking at it. I guess I'd only add my highest expectations are reserved for Alex Mendez primarily, who should be keying the attack from the midfield, hoping for big tournaments from Ulianez on the wing, Brandon Cervenia at central midfield. He'll be likely Mendez's partner in this opener, and all the defenders. Plenty of promising fullbacks in attendance, and some of them will play center back. Julian Araujo is an exciting young player who can slot in at center back, but usually plays fullback for the LA Galaxy Academy. Manny Perez, Chris Gloucester, Matt Real, Jalen Lindsay, all fullbacks who need to sort of distinguish themselves and maybe enter that cheat code that you just discussed.
Yeah, for those fullbacks, exactly. I want to see them not put a foot wrong defensively, like in 1v1 situations, and I want to see them look better than some of the wingers in the attacking side of the field. They've got to do both those things at the highest possible level, and then we'll be like, all right, maybe this guy's got a chance.
Yeah. Just a programming note. Our plan next week is to review the first couple of games, maybe not review them in great detail, but review some of the performances, and then react to the release of the U.S. men's national team roster for this next camp. So we may have an extra episode next week. I feel like I've beaten this U20 preview circuit to death. I was on the Top Drawer Soccer Show with Travis Clark. I discussed it a little bit with Daryl Grove on the Total Soccer Show. So enough is enough, you know?
No, man, when there's this many games in such a short span, it helps to go in already knowing who all the players are, because you're going to watch 11 players in game one, and then you're going to see 9 new players in game two. So you already want to be familiar with what you're watching for. You guys are doing a great service.
Right. So if you're hungry for more of that, dear listener, check out the Top Drawer Soccer Show this week. I think it was released this morning or last night. On to the next subject.
Yes. Our favorite.
Sergeant Watch. What's going on? What's going on in Bremen?
The saga continues and like had more fuel added to it.
Yes, there was some equivocation from Florian Kohfeldt, the young manager at Werder Bremen, ahead of their home game against Bayer Leverkusen, which was on Sunday. He said essentially, Will Sargent be there? We'll see. And then he wasn't in the 18. And by the way, Bremen lost 6-2 to Leverkusen, which has a side that's been struggling so far in the Bundesliga this year. So
Sargent watch was a blast. Like I'm following almost all the Twitter accounts of the teams with Americans on them. And even on Saturday, they had just a picture of the group sort of from a distance training. And I like am pulling it up in my crime lab. And I'm like, enhance. And I'm like, there's some fluffy red hair over there. So right away, I was excited. I was like, he's training. And I sent it to a couple of you guys. And immediately somebody responded back. And I was like, yeah, but I count 19 people in uniform in that training scene.
Yeah, the forensics are in full effect. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm still okay with it. Like, my big thing is always like the competent coaching staffs and programs have a plan, and it's not like Sargent, they're in desperate need of somebody to step up and score a bunch of goals. So it's not like they're, trotting out some anemic offense. They're working Sargent in gradually, if they are at all. And putting him in that group to train the day before a game and then everything leading up to the game is probably a good experience for the kid, for an 18-year-old who might then go through those same motions mm-hmm. for a midweek cup game. And then maybe he goes through those motions to be a reserve in a week or two. You know, that these are positive things.
Yeah. It's a matter of when, not if. I think it just might take a little while than we all would like. I think you raised some good questions yesterday in our private conversation about, you know, his goal scoring record and how it stacks up against other players in the Regionalliga, which is the fourth division of German soccer, which is where he's been playing for Bremen 2.
Yeah.
Should we dive into that a little bit?
Somebody asked about Sebastian Soto on Twitter. And, you know, in my head, I was like, is Sebastian Soto in line for a first team call up? Like, does that make sense? So I jumped on to see who else Sebastian Soto's playing for Hanover's 19s. Mm-hmm. So I jumped onto Hanover's site and was like, who else plays for Hanover? And I see that on their U23s, they have a 19-year-old kid who's got like 8 goals and roughly the same number of minutes as Soto has his goals. And that just makes me wonder, like, obviously I've never heard of this 19-year-old kid. I don't even have his name in front of me.
Benjamin Hodzic.
There you go. So exactly. No one's heard of Benjamin Hodzic. And so that made me wonder, like, is everybody sitting on a 19 or 18-year-old kid on their U23 team and their U19 team who's putting up numbers in the same way Sargent and Soto are? And we just pay attention to Sargent and Soto because of that U.S. magnifying glass that we deploy. So we kind of did a little bit of digging.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think the answer is no. Not every club is sitting on a player like that. We'll start with sort of the maybe discouraging context on Sargent, which is that, you know, he has 6 goals and 10 appearances in the Regionalliga, which is a league with it's 5 regional leagues, each with 18 teams. So 90 teams across Germany playing in this fourth tier. A lot of them are. Or some number of them are second teams, you know, like reserve squads, like the one for Bremen and the one for Hanover. Sargent is tied with 26 other players in that 90-team pool with those 6 goals. So there are 26 players with 6 goals so far this season. And there are 32 players among those 90 teams that have more than 6 goals. So that's sort of the note of caution context, I would say.
Yeah, and I was like when I sort of started digging, and the first team I looked at was Hanover, and I was like, oh Jesus, they've got a 19-year-old who's scoring at the same clip as Soto and Sargent in the fourth division. I was like, this is what we're going to see. Everybody's got these kids just sort of stockpiling. And then you sent me that bit about there's 30, you know, there's basically 50 people who have matched Sargent's goal total. And I was like, ah, there it is. Like Sargent sort of, I mean, in the bigger context, Sargent's not anything special. But I think I was actually even surprised to find out when you dug a little further that very few of those guys who are putting those numbers up are under the age of 22, much less 18 years old.
Right. So interestingly, Hodzic, the guy who's ahead of Soto, and Sargent have been playing in the same league. I didn't do an exhaustive look at all five leagues, but in the North region, which is where Sargent and Hajic are playing, the goal scorers ahead of Sargent are ages 22, 27, 24, 19, that's Hajic, 21, 26, 24, 27, and 24. So most of them are, seasoned professionals at this point. And they've all gotten 3 to 5 more games than Sargent. Hajic is the kind of the exception. I would say Hajic and Sargent are kind of the exception in this whole group in that they've gotten a little bit fewer games and they are still teenagers. And I think, one thing I didn't share with you, which I think is also interesting, is the Soccerway website lists how many of the goals that were scored were the first goal of the game.
Yeah.
Which is a decisive, I guess somewhat of a proxy for a more decisive goal. And five of Sargent's 6 goals were the first goal of the game. And that's second best in the league. So
yep, and no penalties for Sargent, where some of these other guys have padded a little bit. Some of them
right.
have padded a lot with penalties to their total. So yes, I think the big picture takeaway was that Sargent isn't like just one of dozens. I mean, even in that context, Sargent's a pretty exciting prospect.
Yeah, I think so too. And then I guess Hajic is just one to watch because he's probably ahead of Sebastian Soto at Hanover. And people ask, well, is Soto going to get with the first team at Hanover? I would say, probably not anytime soon with Hajic ahead of him and
Bobby Wood,
the fearsome Bobby Wood. Right. Feel like we covered Sargent watch. I guess there's a chance he'll be in the squad tomorrow for this cup match.
I'm cautiously optimistic. I feel like it would make sense to have that be the next progression in the plan. If he wasn't, then I really don't understand what the point would be to have him miss a couple of Bremen 2 games to dress just to sort of travel along in a couple of games. This seems like the ideal time to introduce him to the squad. Give Pizarro a break so Pizarro doesn't play a game and then a midweek game and then a game on the weekend again.
Yeah. Definitely. I'm cautiously optimistic, so I'm taking the day off and I'm sending my wife and children to the country for the day. All right, let's move on to some less encouraging news. Bad reports out of France about Matt Miazga. He of the Diego Lainez height mocking episode. What's going on there? What's your read on it?
My read is that Miazga's days at Nantes are numbered. He had a rough outing. It's based on a couple of reports. He had a couple of rough outings in a row before the international break in October. One of the outings was the highlight that made the rounds was Miazga conceding a pretty ridiculous penalty, like bad decision, bad tackle, and not. Not had been struggling. Their manager sacked, new manager comes in, and that's sort of Miazga's first impression is a guy on loan who's, playing poorly. And so the reports are that the new management is sort of washing their hands of Miazga, and he's not their guy going forward. He was left out of the game day roster the past two matches, so things are looking bleak for him at Nantes.
Yeah. He's got 8. They have 8 more matches before the winter break in Nantes. So, it's not inconceivable that he could work his way back into their good graces, but it sure doesn't look good right now. He wasn't even in the squad that traveled for the cup match this week. I think it's either Tuesday or Wednesday. I can't remember. Yikes.
So, I mean, these kinds of hiccups happen. It's not ideal. We just want our guys playing. 90 minutes is sort of what I want. I don't really care that much if they're lighting things up or not, but this will happen when you're out on loan. Like there's the club you're on loan to has not as much invested in you. So if they're not happy with you, they'll be quicker to sort of sever the tie. My guess is if this is going as poorly as the reports are, Chelsea sort of take him back and then instantly loan him out again in January. And he just sort of starts all over, which is what he would have done anyway, just in in May instead of January.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In August instead of January.
He's going to be a journeyman for a while. I mean, I guess there was some thought that Nantes would be his landing spot, and it would have been probably a good spot to land, but that looks less likely than it did 3 weeks ago, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Something we don't have in the planning doc here, but some other sort of discouraging news, I think, is Eric Palmer Brown just really can't break into that first team at NAC Breda. And Roman Gall doesn't seem to be getting minutes at Malmo. You know,
yeah, I was waiting to really get discouraged about Gall because Malmo had 4 games in short order. So I was thinking, all right, well, he's not playing in this one, but maybe that just means they're saving minutes or saving his legs for the next one. But when you don't play in any of the games in congested fixtures, I think you can draw some conclusions there that he is not rated particularly highly for Malmo.
Yeah. So, you know, there were a lot of calls from Gall to be called up in the last camp, and I feel like those calls have cooled off a little bit, quieted down. Let's move on. Women's roster. The U.S. Women's National Team just released a roster. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, they dropped theirs so early. So they're taking their November Europe trip to, I think, Portugal and Scotland is their round of friendlies.
Okay.
And I think it's just at this point they're just sort of in tune-up mode and sharpening mode for France next summer.
Any surprises in the call-ups for you?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's not surprises, just kind of. I think they're kind of cool call-ups. The 11 for this women's team is almost set, barring injury. We basically know who's starting for this team in their first game in France in June. But around the fringes, there are going to be some spots that are to play for. And we got a couple of cool call-ups for those. So Danielle Colaprico, who's like a center mid, I think she's uncapped at this point. She got a call-up. She's been sort of a favorite of close followers of the league. And they've thought that she could have. So there are a lot of players who became favorites over the last year and a half when Jill Ellis was doing her experimenting. You know, the main calls were you need to be playing a second central midfielder. She was sort of going through phases of only playing one central midfielder, similar to the men's team. And it often had the same sort of boring soccer, bad results outcomes. Mm-hmm. So Danielle Colaprico is one who a lot of people were clamoring for. And so she's getting her call up now. And we're playing good soccer now. So this would be a good chance for her to sort of show that she can play. She's sort of included at the expense of Morgan Bryan, who left off for what we can tell, just a coach's decision. So that's kind of a big omission, if it means Morgan Bryan's fallen out of favor. Otherwise, it's Adriana French, who's widely considered the best goalkeeper in the league, but who's never been capped for the U.S. Jill Ellis prefers Alyssa Nair and Ashlyn Harris to French, but French keeps going to camps and then keeps not being on the game day roster, so my fingers are crossed that she actually plays in this one. A college kid out of North Carolina, Emily Fox, is kind of shoring up the defense because we're missing two of our primary defenders to injury. Andy Sullivan, another center mid, back in the fold. Allie Long, recalled. And then one of the really cool ones is a forward, Jessica McDonald, who's probably 30, so she's not like new on the scene. But she had a really good year in the league. I think finals MVP, scored a couple goals in the championship game. She'll be one I'm excited to see play because I do think that 6 months from now, 8 months from now, Carly Lloyd's spot might be up for grabs. And McDonald might not be young, but she could be a sort of a one-off inclusion on this roster for the 2019 World Cup.
She's younger, she's younger than Lloyd by quite a
bit. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she's definitely not like one for the future. It would really just be she's doing really well right now, so maybe she can help us in certain situations. So
would Colaprico, that's the first one you mentioned? She would be like a replacement for Horan or Rose Lavelle, Lindsay Horan or Rose Lavelle.
I think she'd probably be more of a replacement for like Julie Ertz if you wanted to. So they kind of have a cool ability to shuffle where, at least in my mind, and I think Ertz has played this way, you could take out a Horan and Lavelle and then slide Ertz into a more attacking role if you had somebody else you could introduce as that holding mid. And Morgan Bryant does that. McCall Zerboni had been doing that, but she had her elbow broken a few months back in the league. So she's out for like 5 more months. But so essentially it could free you up to either play Julie Ertz somewhere else, rest her, or, I mean, essentially that you could slide her up, you could slide her Julie Ertz into the back line, or you could just give her a break.
Okay.
Cole Prigo, she's just sort of a pace setter at holding mid.
Okay. Well, the first game is November 8th. The first game in this window for them is November 8th at Portugal. Check it out. That's Thursday at noon.
Yeah, just an obscene amount of soccer in November for U.S. fans.
Yeah. Good thing we have a podcast.
All right, that was the women's sort of preview. Let's get to the men in the November window.
We've kind of gone away from our exhaustive roster projection episodes. I'm not sure why. We don't really have a strategy. We just do what we do. But
it's because the Federation completely changed their announcement schedule. Now they're announcing like a week and a half early or 2 weeks early with no rhyme or reason. So
I know
we have to do it way earlier now.
It screws us all up. The U.S. plays, of course, England and then Italy in the middle of the month. We expect a roster on Monday, I think. That's what Stephen Goff reported on Twitter yesterday. So let's talk about that a little bit. We'll probably be missing several key MLS guys. I guess that's the first thing to mention. Unless Red Bulls succumb to a playoff collapse, the largest absences on this team will probably be Tyler Adams, Aaron Long, and Tim Parker. We don't even know if Parker would get called up, but he has in the past. And then
the winner of those head-to-head face-offs of Ariola Zardes, the Ariola Knaus Hamid versus Zardes Trap Stefan. Not that any of those guys are guaranteed to call up, even if they are available, but I assume if they are still alive in the playoffs, they will be left off as a courtesy.
Yeah, I guess if I were the coach, I would be more likely to call up Ariola and Knaus than Zardes and Trap. Although Stefan probably gets the call ahead of Hamid. But we don't know how Sarakin is thinking, and it looks like Sarakin's going to be making this roster and coaching these games, unless we get some kind of surprise explosion of an announcement from the Federation after tomorrow's result between...
Right, you think they're burying the lead with the, we're going to announce our roster? They actually start off with, or the last name on their roster list is actually the new manager.
Yeah, maybe Sarakin and Berhalter are already on their own Slack channel creating the roster as we speak.
But no, there's no way, right? There's no way that they would announce this roster if they would then hire a coach between the roster announcement and the games. Unless you're saying like Berhalter is already picking the team that's going to be announced.
I don't know.
It doesn't make any sense to do it the other way, right? Where Sarakin picks the team, and then between then and the actual games, they announce a new coach who then is sort of bound to Sarakin's choices.
I don't know. Would that be a bad practice? I don't know.
It'd be terrible. It'd kind of be like a big F you to the new guy. Hey, welcome to the squad. Here's your team that we chose for you. That your first action is to take somebody else's team and play them.
Yeah. Well, we can't control any of that. It would be, I guess you're right, it would be an FU to Mr. Berhalter. Who do you want to see on the roster? And
I want to see, all I care about is the front six. I want to see a very specific front six of Josh Sargent as a striker. I want Christian Pulisic wide right. I want to see Jonathan Amon split wide left because I want to see Tim Weah playing underneath Sargent. And you can call him a 10. You can call him a shadow striker. I feel like the U.S. could introduce a false 10, but I want him in that central spot that Julian Green had been occupying. And then I want McKennie and Acosta holding because I'm assuming Tyler Adams will be unavailable. I want that front six. If Adams is there, put him in for Acosta.
Okay. I have a slightly different front six laid out, but only because I'm kind of a wimp and I didn't want to put Amon on there because I thought against England we would want to have a little bit more defensive solidity. But I would say Sargent at striker, Weah wide left, Pulisic wide right, Acosta as the, you know, quasi 10. Obviously he's not a 10. And then McKennie and Delgado holding, because I agree Adams will probably not be there. But I'd be happy with either of those two setups.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be mad if Delgado makes it on there. And I don't expect him way out to do it to be in that central role. I expect him to be wide with Amon not starting.
Yeah, that seems the most likely. Although, you know, Amon would love to see Amon start again. The defense is kind of waffled a little bit with the Miazga news. Brooks hasn't been playing super well for Wolfsburg, although they did have a good game over the weekend. Robinson, Wigan continues to struggle, and I don't know that Robinson has been playing poorly. I haven't watched the games, but he's not covering himself in glory. So I guess I would say Yedlin, Brooks, Miazga, Robinson across the back, but I
yeah, man. No matter how much they waffle, there's no like sort of threat to that back four being broken up.
Yeah,
because your other choices, especially with MLS guys not there, you're talking CCV, who isn't really breaking through at Swansea, Eric Palmer Brown, who we already talked about. After that in Europe, I think you're Tim Ream or Brandon Hines Ike. Mm-hmm. So if you're going with or Chris Richards, I guess, could be a surprise call up.
Yeah, I doubt that'll happen.
But yeah, the back line's kind of having their trials and tribulations, but they're still the back line. There's just no real alternatives. How about goalkeeper for you?
I mean, this seems like it's ripe for an Ethan Horvath bone to be thrown, because Stefan and Guzan should be busy with the MLS playoffs unless their teams collapse.
Well, I feel like Columbus won't be favored to win this week.
That's true.
I don't remember if they're tomorrow or Thursday, but Stefan could be. So my thing is, I kind of want him to leave Stefan off anyway, even if his team loses. I think I'd rather have this window go to Horvath. And I'm going to like even say give the backup spot to Klinsmann.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. But the problem is, do we want to go play in England, play at Wembley, say we play really well, and then we end up with a couple of like just massive goalkeeping errors, and that's what colors the whole result. I don't know. Maybe it
I don't
matter.
Care. I don't even. Yeah, I was going to say I don't care about the result, and I trust that. These guys who are all pros, I mean, if there's a terrible goalkeeping error, aren't going to like hang their heads for the next 4 months. They'll be like, yeah, our goalkeeper was bad. He's probably not going to be our goalkeeper very long. So I kind of want this to be the fight for a couple of guys fighting for that third string spot behind Stefan and Guzan / Hamid.
Okay.
Almost fighting for that fourth string spot. But yeah, that's kind of what I want. What we know we'll have all of those Stefan, Guzan, Hamed guys available for January as well. So we can kind of plan ahead and say another full camp with them. So let's give Horvath and Klinsmann a shot to battle it out between the two of them.
Okay. Yeah, I have no huge problem with it. I guess I want Bobby Wood there. I'm still on team Bobby for sure. CCB did get a start for Swansea last week, I think. I don't know if he started over the weekend.
Midweek. No, he came off the bench in that weekend game. But yes, he started on like their Tuesday game for the championship that plays every 4 days.
Right. Man, what a schedule they have. I'm hopeful about him. Bring in Novakovic, why not? Sure. I know you're not a big fan, but after that, I'm kind of down for whatever. Let's look at Emmanuel Sabi. Why not?
I want Sabi there. Sabi's the guy I want there. Out of everyone else who isn't sort of – out of all the uncapped guys or all the fringe guys, Sabi's the one I actually want there. I don't care if it's Gooch. I don't care if it's Gall. I don't care about Green or Morales, Emerson Hinman. Those guys, if they're there, great. If not, whatever. But I do want Sabi there. I want them to get a look at Sabi in camp.
Okay. Yeah. You don't care about Morales, Ream, Heinemann, Gooch, none of those guys.
I kind of think Gooch has like. I think it's kind of nice that we have that long list of guys who can be sort of roster filler for a strictly European window. Mm-hmm. But I don't think any of those guys are the future. I guess I'd give Gooch the inside track over Gall just because literally of the amount of playing time one's getting versus the other. I know though it's hard to even make comparisons between the leagues.
Cue the debates between League One and the Allsvenskan. Yeah.
But no, I do want Sabi. Like Sabi's one I feel like I really want. And again, in my formation, he'd be the natural like backup to Amon because Weah would be central.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just for those who aren't following the Danish league, Sabi scored a handful of bangers early in the season. He's been quieter lately, but he did get on the field on Sunday after a little bit of an injury timeout, and he played well by all reports.
Playing for Hobro IK, who had been bottom of the table for a while. Are they still bottom of the? Yes, they are still 14th out of 14 in the Danish league.
They did win on Sunday though, or Saturday, whatever day it was.
And
he went 90.
Yeah, the table doesn't do him any favors either. They are at minus 18 on goal difference, and the next lowest team is minus 9.
Yikes. Work to be done at Hobro.
Okay. Last bit on this men's national team, just because I want to acknowledge that we're almost talking about Amon as always a given. Like, oh, yeah, Amon should – I'm saying he should start. And you're like, well, I don't know if I can say – like, it's very possible he won't be called up at all. I'd be super disappointed if Amon isn't called up at all.
Yeah, I think Tab is lobbying hard behind the scenes for him to be included in the U20 roster, which you know, to go back to that for a minute, reading between the lines in Tab Ramos's Q&A on the U.S. Soccer website yesterday, you can tell he's frustrated at how many of his players are not available to him. So I imagine he'll be lobbying for Amon, maybe even Sargent. I don't know.
I feel like that'd be such a waste, but... It'd be at least a consolation if instead of being at the national team, those guys were still playing just with the 20s.
Yeah, I do think Sargent is past it. I think Amon's past it, and I think Weah's past it. And it's not because, I don't care about the U20 championship, but it's because we don't have high level attackers ahead of them on the national team. So. I saw somebody was arguing on Twitter, well, Diego Lainez is going to be at the U20 championship for Mexico. Why are our best U20s too good to be there? Well, it's because Diego Lainez is behind Carlos Vela and Tecatito and Chicharito, you know, like maybe not bona fide world-class players, but
generational stars of Mexico.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are no corollaries in the U.S. men's national team, with the possible exception of Pulisic, but I don't think Pulisic is on Vela's level.
I'd also say that those three guys, Sargent, Amon, Weah, are past it in the sense of they're past U20s, in the sense of the idea of U20s is to develop players. And I don't think that those guys playing with U20s is beneficial to their development. I think they're past it in the sense that they're literally like, we talk about we need guys to play like they're playing with a cheat code. Like it would be, they would almost be disinterested in the level of play that they'd be sort of sinking to. Am I being too like critical of U20s in general and too generous to the talents of those four guys, three guys?
I don't know. I think I don't know. I don't. Yeah, I guess I'd neither agree nor disagree with what you just said. I mostly just think I want them with the national team as a function of the lack of talent on the U.S. national team in their positions aside from them.
Okay.
I'm going to stick to that.
You. Got you.
Please refer to my press office for further statements. anything else on the roster?
No, that's my whole camp for November.
Okay. Let's take a break, and when we come back, Richie Ledesma, the 18-year-old U.S. U20 midfielder and potential heir to the throne of the U.S. men's national team, number 10 position. A throne that was once for 135 minutes sat on by Julian Green. We'll be right back.
But it seems like they all know what I'm supposed to do, so let's switch bodies for a day. You could be me and I could be you. Juggle the pile of shit that's bound to come through. You can have it since it's automatic. Now switch.
Our guest today is Richie Ledesma, an 18-year-old who grew up in Phoenix and rose into the youth national team setup from the Real Salt Lake Academy. A little over 2 years ago, he was riding the bench as a youth player at RSL. Now he's a guaranteed U20 call-up for Tab Ramos when he's healthy. He trialed with the Dutch club PSV Eindhoven in the summer, and it's been widely reported that he'll start playing there in January. Ledesma is sitting out U20 World Cup qualifying with an injury. He and I didn't go into detail on his future in the interview, but suffice it to say, Dutch journalist Rick Elfrink, a respected watcher of PSV, has reported that Ledesma and PSV are working out the details of a deal before the end of the year, after which he would start playing officially for the club in January. He's a smooth, technical, dangerous, versatile player, and I'd argue the brightest American prospect who's neither been capped with the full national team nor played any first team minutes. Here's the interview. Richie, thanks for being here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm good. So you're in Phoenix right now? Is that where you are?
Yep.
Home sweet home.
Home sweet home.
Let's start back at the beginning. You grew up in Casa Grande, is that right?
In Phoenix, Arizona, yep.
Okay. How did
not
you
in Casa Grande.
Not in Casa Grande? Okay.
Nah.
How did you get into soccer? And was it from your father, your mother?
My whole family plays soccer, so my dad got me into it. I didn't want to when I was younger, so my dad kind of forced me to, and now it's my life, basically.
Right. What did you want to do instead of soccer when you were little?
Well, it's not that I didn't want to do soccer. It's just that I was shy, so I really didn't have anyone to have friends to play with, and my dad just took me one day to the park, and he found a club for me.
Okay, so what do your parents do when you were growing up? Were they cops, bartenders, accountants?
My dad's a truck driver, and my mom was a chiropractor.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So your dad got you in with a club in Phoenix, and how did you get hooked up with the RSL Academy?
Their scout, his name was Rafa. I was playing in Casa Grande State Cup final, and he came up to me after the game and asked if I wanted to come try out for RSL, and I said yeah. And that's where it all started. I made the team. And the first year, which was 2 years ago, I didn't really start, so it was kind of hard for me at first, but I worked my way up.
You sure did. So that would have been, what, 3 years ago when the scout from RSL noticed you?
2 years ago. I've been with the academy 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, it's been a rapid rise. So can you...
Yeah.
Can you point to a game or even a moment when you thought, all right, I'm good at this, and maybe I could have a career in the sport?
State Cup final, actually. Like, I was motivated. I was like, oh, I'm doing this because I love it now. And, yeah. There was a game in the State Cup final. We lost, actually, in PKs. Mm-hmm. And it was to go to regionals to Hawaii, actually.
But you played well.
And we didn't make it through. Yeah, I played well. Scored the tying PK, and yeah.
So over those last, so you said initially at RSL you weren't a starter when you were at the academy there?
No. Yeah, I was not a starter until our midfielder got injured. He tore his ACL.
Huh.
And since then, I've been starting because he tore his ACL. And when he came back, he was struggling still, so I just became a consistent starter for my team.
That would have been, so when that happened, that would have been what year? Do you remember 2016?
2016, yeah.
In the spring or the fall?
Spring.
Okay, so the...
Yeah, but I've only played 2 seasons with RSL. That's it.
Yeah, so you first starting games in the spring of 2016, and then...
Yeah, in the showcase, actually. He got injured in the showcase. So after the showcase, I was consistent starting.
Okay. Because the 17-18 season was when you really kind of broke out on the national scene. That would have been the next season.
Yeah.
Were you, when you first started with RSL, were you intimidated? Was it easy to get integrated with the group?
Yeah, it was easy. They made me feel like I was at home. And I was a commuter, so I would drive from Phoenix to Casa Grande. It was like an hour drive. And they would like welcome me and stuff. And I knew a lot of people from club, so from in Arizona, so it was fun.
Okay. So, go ahead, sorry.
No, at first they just didn't like really seem to trust me, but like after a while, they knew I was good enough to play, so.
Awesome. Now you got on my radar, and I guess probably a lot of other people's radars, when you were called up to the youth summit, the national team youth summit in January. How did you find out about that? And were you surprised? What was your reaction?
Yeah, Martin Vasquez, the head coach from RSL.
Right, I've heard of
Academy
that.
Coach. Yeah, he took me into his office one day. I think it was like 2 days before camp. And he was like, Richie, like you've become a better player, mature enough. And I was playing with the 19th. And he's all like, you got invited to your first camp and this and that. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. So I called my parents right away, and they were happy. My mom was crying, my dad was crying. They didn't believe it. I didn't believe it myself. So it was pretty shocking.
But then you showed up to that camp that you couldn't believe you got called up to, and immediately got moved from the U19s to the U20s. Or I don't know if it was immediate.
Yeah.
But how did that happened?
It was the 19s went home earlier, and the 20s, they stayed like 2 days extra. Mm. I think because they had a game. And we had games. We played the 20s. I started versus the 20s, but... We played, who else did we play? I'm trying to think. We played 2 teams. I didn't start the first one. AJ Seal started only the first one as a 6. And then I went second half. I don't know who we played. Oh, we played the 18s, the younger guys.
Okay. But then you started against the 20s.
Yeah. Correct. And I was playing as a 6.
Huh. Did you?
And then Tab called me after like the 19th camp, after that 20s game, and he was like, "Frankie, Chris Richards, and you, and if it's okay with you guys can stay 2 days earlier to help the 20s for their game."
I see. What do you think happened to that game? Did you show Andrew Carlton how to play soccer, or like what happened?
I did. Tackle him a couple of times, but he's obviously a good player. I known him. His name was out there, you know, so I just had to stay focused and did my thing. I never played the 6, actually.
That was your first time playing the 6?
That was the first time playing the 6 at camp.
Because you also played...
normally like a 10, 8.
Right. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Winger. Yeah.
So those friendlies in France happened, I don't know, a month or two after that, and you went on that trip, and you played the 6, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Didn't you play the 6 in those games too?
Yeah, I played the 6, yeah.
How did that feel out there against, you know, the greatest soccer nation on earth at the moment? A little bit older guys. Describe those.
It felt good, like, games. The first time we played them twice, actually, France. And the first time we played them, I didn't start. Like, most of the younger guys didn't start that got called up to that camp. Like Alex Mendez didn't start, Frankie, and they were losing like 3-0, I think, first half. And then I went in for like 10 minutes. We lost 4-2, and then we trained for like a couple of days, and then we played them again. And then I was shocked that I started, and it felt good after we beat them 1-0 last minute, but it was still good because they're a really good team, big, physical.
Yeah, Frankie scored the winner in that game too, didn't he?
Yeah, like 90th minute, yeah, he came in.
What did you, I mean, so you're going from in the span of, you know, 18 months or something, playing with a club in Phoenix to playing against France in a friendly in Spain. Like, what do you take out of those games? Like, what do you learn from that experience?
Oh, that hard work pays off, and I never quit since the day I started playing it.
Okay, well, I started really, really paying attention to your game when you got on the field for Real Monarchs, and something I ask a lot of people I interview, I want to ask you too, what's the difference in level between the Academy and USL? You know, you could go in as much detail as you want, like how much of a gap is there?
Okay. Honestly, I'm going to be honest, I don't think it's a big difference. Just honestly, like bigger. I don't know about faster, maybe a little faster, but if like our boys, our academy boys, and our academy, they could handle it. So it's honestly a good experience, man. I'm not gonna lie, fun. Especially when the teammates treat you like you're on the team. So it wasn't that hard for me, at least.
Yeah, it didn't look like it was that hard for you. Did you were you nervous when you went out there? Or?
When I made my debut versus Seattle 2, yeah, I was. The coach, Mark Briggs, he told me not to be nervous, but like, it was my first, like, people watching me, so I was a little bit nervous. But once I got on the ball, once I touched the ball, I was like, why am I nervous? And I just played my game for 10 minutes, 13.
Okay. We're not going to talk too much about the future because, you know, it's still not totally settled, I understand. But you trialed with PSV in the summer, PSV Eindhoven, and played with the U23s in a friendly, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, two friendlies, yeah.
Okay, two friendlies. Tell me about that. I want to hear everything about it. Like, what was the level like? Let's start with that, the level.
All right. Well, once I was out there, obviously, a little shy, obviously. Always. But they started talking to me, like, because I'm an American, so it's different for them. So they started talking to me in English. Like, they can speak a little English. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty shy. Like, first training, we would just do rondos. They would make me, like, jog because it was my first time, you know. But game time came around, and I started both games, playing the eight, actually. Mm-hmm. And the level, honestly, it's crazy. It's much harder, stronger, faster. It's just different football.
Yeah.
And the first game, we weren't good. I think we won 3-1 versus, who did we play? I don't even know, honestly.
Yeah, I forget.
But yeah, I just remember when we played Darlington FC or something like that.
That's the one that there were highlights going around. From,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It looked like
We won our games, both teams.
It looked like you had a good game against Darlington FC in the highlights.
Yeah. Yeah, in the first game they said that I didn't run as much. I don't know if I was because I was jet lagged. Or I don't know. But then I was like, oh shoot! Like I gotta pick it up a little because it's crazy that their fitness level is. Crazy, like they run for days. It's crazy.
Huh.
Yeah. And they said after the game that I played well and that your fitness was better than the last game and that they were happy to see that.
Did they have you like hooked up with one of those little sports bra things?
Yeah, GPS. Yeah. They're old style little sports bra.
What do you mean? How are they old style?
It's like there's just a big monitor on top of your bag. It's not like the little ones we have in the U.S.
I see.
Yeah, they're different.
For a trial like that, who makes the first contact? Is that like your agent doing that, or RSL?
I have no clue.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure PSG just had interest and wanted me to come out.
I see. When you go, I mean, this is stuff that's probably boring to you, but I think is would be interesting to a lot of people listening to the podcast. Like, when you go, where do you stay, and who's telling you, like, hey, show up at the training ground at 9 a.m. or whatever, you know? How does that work?
I stayed in a hotel like 5 minutes away from their stadium and like 10 minutes away from training ground. And their GM would tell me the time. He would text me and he would give me a ride to practice and stuff.
I see. Their GM, like their technical director?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you start out with the U23s in that trial, or did you start out with
the U23s? I played the whole time. No, 23s the whole time.
Okay. Were you introduced to the locker room, on the field?
Yeah. Or? Yeah, they introduced me everywhere. Training. We actually went to a little camp, like a little 40-minute drive, and we stayed at a like big little house and just bonding.
Huh.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Did you learn how to like tie knots and make a fire and stuff?
Nah, they rented like a big mansion, and there was like tennis courts, basketball courts, and we had a tennis tournament. It was just bonding with the team, honestly.
So like spending the night there, like a big bed and breakfast.
Almost. Yeah, we would spend the night. Yeah, do doubles the next day.
I see. So it sounds like you heard directly from the PSV staff at the end of each game. Were they talking to you at the end of the trainings too? Like, hey, you should be doing this better.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. Like they said that you need to be more confident on the ball. And I was like, yeah, and this time.
Did you feel, it sounds like you did, but I just ask it anyway. Did you feel like you fit in at that level? And
yeah.
Like you could,
yeah, I did. Yeah. It was hard. I'm not gonna lie. It was different from MLS teams, academy, USL, obviously.
You, as you mentioned, you've played as a 6, as an 8, as a 10, as a winger for Real Monarchs, and maybe at other places. What do you feel like is your natural position right now?
I want to say the 8 or the 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you are about to receive the ball in the middle of the field and you've got a defender coming at you from the back, what are you thinking about? Or maybe I should ask, are you even thinking? Yeah.
Yeah, I always like, my dad always showed me to always like know what to do before you get the ball. So I always try to look behind me if I have a man on quick and then do a turn, play quick or play him back and open up again. Just play simple, you know?
Yeah. What was your, so did your dad play professionally or like?
No, my dad was, he played soccer since he was like, I want to say 16 maybe. Mm-hmm. And he would just play around Arizona. He was known around Arizona. Like, he has a lot of trophies in his room. And yeah, he's good though. He's a little short like me. He's shorter than me actually. Fast. He's really fast. Technical, left-footed.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'll have to make some GIFs of him if I can find them on the internet somewhere.
Nah, he's like, he's old. He's 43. Not old, but he's getting there.
Yeah, 43 is not, don't tell me 43 is old, please.
Yeah.
Would you rather blast one from 25 yards or slip a perfect through ball between two defenders for an assist?
I'm more of an assist guy, honestly. So I would probably slip it through.
All right.
But obviously, if I'm open, I have to shoot. My dad gets mad when I don't shoot.
Yeah, because you can't do it.
I don't like. Yeah. I just don't like to be selfish, but sometimes you got to be selfish. That's what he always tells me. And I agree with him.
Right. I see this is kind of a tangent, but I see that your buddy Sebastian Soto is managing to score goals even without you. Even without you, he can still score goals.
Yeah, he's chilling. It's crazy. Soto FaceTimes me every like day. Yeah. And he just tells me how it's going, and I tell him how it's going. He's like, bro, I'm killing it. Yeah, so, but he's my brother. He's like my brother to me.
That's awesome.
I miss playing with him.
I bet. I saw some highlights just this morning. He looks like he's confident on the ball. Like his first touch is purposeful.
Ridiculous. Oh my God. It's insane. For a striker, that's something else, honestly.
Yeah. So what do you have to work on in your game? Like, what are your weaknesses?
I feel like my weaknesses, obviously strength-wise, and maybe, I don't think, people say like I'm pretty fast, but maybe my fitness a little, but mostly upper body. Mm. But yeah, that's it, pretty much.
So you like hitting that bench press, or how do you work on that?
Bench press, chest press.
Who do you model your game after, like in the global game?
Ooh, I want to say Iniesta.
Mm. How are you staying sharp right now? Because you haven't played for a couple months, at least that I know of. How do you out there like juggling in the backyard or like playing against the wall?
Yeah, juggling inside my house, working on my weak foot. Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're not going to be there because of a little bit of an injury, but U20 World Cup qualifying kicks off on Thursday.
Yep.
Who should we look out for on this roster? It's not exactly a first choice roster, but there's still a lot of good players there. Who are you going to be watching?
I got to say Alex Mendes and Uli and Frankie Amaya. Yep. Those are my three.
Yeah, Frankie came from UCLA for this tournament, and everybody knows Alex is at Freiburg now.
Yeah, Freiburg. I'm excited. I can't wait.
You've played a lot with those guys, with Mendes and Carlton now.
Yeah.
How's the chemistry there? It seems like you guys would fit in well together.
Yeah, we do. Practices, they put us on the same team. They try to put like a starting lineup before a game or something, and we just kill it. We just understand each other, especially me and Mendes. It's fun playing with Mendes.
Yeah, tell like people who haven't seen a lot of Mendes, why don't you, I'd love to hear you describe like what he's good at, you know?
He's good at receiving the ball, hitting ping long balls. He can hit balls like over the top and everything. And just trust him, honestly. I just trust him with everything. So I try to play the ball as much as I can to him. And he's always like 100% that he'll get there, sticking in a tackle, 50-50. It's just Alex Mendes. He's different from other midfielders. Mm-hmm.
He's tough. I've noticed that.
Yeah. Yeah, he is tough. I remember Alex Mendes when 2 years ago, actually, when I started playing for the academy, we got into a little fight. Yeah, when we played him in Colorado in GA Cup.
What was the fight over?
Yeah, we got it. It was over. I think he just like tackled me from behind, and I got a foul. And I just like I got mad that he hit me from behind, and like I just started arguing with him, and like because we didn't know each other back then, so it was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool memory.
That is cool. Go ahead. Sorry.
We both got yellow cards.
Fair is fair.
Yeah.
Let's see. Anybody? Is there anybody who folks are sleeping on? I guess you might say Frankie because he doesn't get as much buzz as like you and Alex and Uli.
Yeah, Frankie. Who else? I know that kid from New England Revolution. I don't know his name.
Anking? Isaac?
Anking? Yeah, I want to see how he does. He looks pretty good.
That's good to hear. He's going to get his chance.
Yeah, he will get his chance. I never seen him play or talk to him personally, but I'm excited to see him.
Yeah, cool. Well, I think I read that your parents immigrated to the U.S. from Mexico. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. So a lot of people are worried that when a Mexican-American player starts to get attention, he might leave and play for Mexico. And, you know, so far those fears have proven to be somewhat justified with Efra Alvarez and Jonathan Gonzalez.
Yeah.
I guess I have a two-part question. Would you ever switch and play for Mexico?
No, I wouldn't.
Awesome. That's music to my ears. And
yeah, I wouldn't do that.
And maybe if you could like step back a little bit, what do you think could change that so that players of Mexican descent feel as excited about playing for the U.S. as they do about playing for El Tri if El Tri does come calling like they did for Gonzalez and Alvarez?
Obviously, I would thank them, but like I would be like I want to stay with the U.S. and try to help them and improve on their game. Mm-hmm. That's what I would tell Mexico and three.
Right. Oh, I have one more question, if you don't mind. You've still got pictures up on social media of you in a RSL shirt, or at least it's a Real Monarch shirt. And it seems like your relationship with the club is still good, even though you're not playing with them anymore. Yeah. Talk about that, like what RSL means to you and how the relationship is today.
I obviously thank them. Like they got me to where I'm at right now, and the relationship just between us, it's just Martin, he loves me. Mike Pecky, he loves me too, obviously. Mark, I know he's gone, but he was one of my favorites out of the academy. But yeah, I told him that I wanted to continue and try to go farther than MLS, and they respected my decision, and that's what made me like thank them, and they're forever in my heart, so they mean a lot to me.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I always go visit. Like not too long ago, I visited, but just to visit, not to start any problems with trying to sign with them or anything.
Right. Yeah, I mean, imagine you have a lot of friends there still, not just the guys you mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, can you think of anything you wish I had asked you about that we should be talking about? Anything?
Not really, no.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Yep, no problem. Thank you.